Tonight we have the long anticipated dedication of the upper room, Baffin Memorial Hall, which Frontline Fellowship has been involved in the project of for something like 18 months. Our vision is Africa for Christ, and we've got a whole new view on the Cape from the upper room. And if you've seen it at night, you'll notice the stained glass windows, the Celtic cross, all that stands out as a message. You might be interested to know what this place looked like 20 years ago. This is what it looked like. Notice the different size of the hedge and notice what the gates look like, and the name on the wall was not the same as what is now, but that's what it looked like back then. And the garden looked nothing like what it looks like now. And you can see the hand of Lenora Hammond all over the place, changing. One of the first things that had to go was that hideous, what do we call it? It looked like it belonged in some Grecian something, but didn't belong here. And the next thing, as Laura said, we've got to paint over that wooden 70s looking side there. But it looks a whole lot different now. A year after we moved in here, in 2002, we had an official dedication by Reverend Bill Baffin, and the sign, we've now got a new sign of this down below. Livingston House will serve the cause of the great commission of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, making disciples, teaching obedience, working for reformation, and praying for revival throughout Africa. That at the name of Jesus every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. From Philippians 2, dedicated on Thanksgiving Day, the 28th of November 2002. And we put in the quote from William Carey, expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. William Carey launched the modern missionary movement in 1793 with a sermon which is summarized in those words. And from this place has been launched marches to Parliament, protests, outreaches. Christian Liberty Books has been an important part of it from the very beginning, because homeschooling, since 1995, we've had Christian Liberty Books, which now has something like 6,000 titles or more, if you count the audiovisuals in. To help homeschoolers in particular, overseen as always by a dedicated feline staff who ensure that this place is rodent-free. In fact, when the builders came into the attic, they said this is the first attic, and they do attic conversions, first attic they've been to where there's no sign whatsoever of any rodents, or that there ever were any rodents, which just goes to show our kitties do their job. The boardroom's been the center of meetings until the upper room has been built up, sorting through books, mailings. I don't know if people can remember that. We used to put things in envelopes and send it to people by mail. That did happen. That was an important part of the work at one time. But I think Livingston House is most famous for shipping, imports and exports, containers, Frontline Gym, moving tons, which happens often. In fact, one year we got 11 containers, or was it 12?
I think it was 12.
We got 12 containers in one year, but we don't get less than 5 or 6 on an average year, and we can process anything from 100 to 200 tons of materials coming in and going out in a given year. Sorting through it, well, you don't need a gym membership when you are at Frontline. You can get the opportunity to move things, and Jonathan has done a sterling job in the stores organizing the Bible study materials, the Sunday school materials, the packs of books that get donated to us, Bibles. And I tend to organize the Bibles inside that tend to get to the missions and other groups that we work with across the field. But otherwise, people come to stores and they get bundles, and sometimes they come with one-ton trucks. And our precious Florence, who for 17 years has overseen a lot of the work here, she was never put in stores, she adopted stores. And Florence has been an essential part of ensuring the stores are rodent-free. 17 years. She was born in what today is Colin's office back in October 2003. And her mother was born in Andrea's bedroom back in Pineland. So this is one of Tabitha's grandkittens, Florence, beloved kitty, and the patron saint of Literature for Africa. So Literature for Africa has a very wide-ranging ministry, prison chaplains, army chaplains, police chaplains, teachers, evangelists, all sorts come. This is an open doors person loading up his truck, heading off to Zimbabwe. He later sent bigger trucks. Now, you can start to see how the hedge changed from the earlier picture, the name, and how the colors, paint, everything else. This is where many a mission begins. Cross the border and all the way up over some pretty inhospitable terrain in order to deliver. And that is a Daniel de Villiers back in 2011, by the way. Wow. Yeah, no. He's been around here a long time. And World Missionary Press gospel booklets, Bibles, New Testaments, Sunday school materials, WMPs, getting all over. That's what we're here for, getting the Word of God out throughout the world. And it goes far and wide, as far north as Sudan. And sometimes we even had individuals going to Egypt. But as far west as Nigeria, as far north as Sudan, throughout even to the Congo. And here you can see French materials being distributed. And in Tanzania, you can spot the flag. And here you can see the French biblical principles for Africa being delivered into the Congo. French John Romans. We've just got another 20,000 John and Romans. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of John and Romans have been distributed from here. So we serve the persecuted church. That's been a major part, putting wheels under the word and chartering aircraft, smuggling in Bibles, getting to areas where we either aren't allowed to go or where it's too dangerous for traditional missionaries. And that's been the vision from the beginning. 39 years. Next year, our mission will celebrate 40 years, by God's grace, of serving in the front line, film evangelism, literature distribution, Bible deliveries, including study Bibles. No matter what the obstacles, there's always a way to get around it. And this is the Nuba Mountains, way behind enemy lines, seeking to put the word into the hands of people who have been severely persecuted for their faith. And sadly, chivalry hasn't quite arrived there, and the women tend to carry the heavy weights over there, although we tend to argue about that. And these are hymn books arriving for the Otoro and the Haiban and the Krongo people, unreached people groups in the Nuba Mountains, that we've supplied the first New Testaments to. So these are just some of the people that we've ministered amongst, and we need to remind ourselves, the recipients of audio Bibles, that's a new development for our mission. Of course, there's people who are literate, so getting audio Bibles to people is another new important priority. Providing chaplains with study Bibles, libraries for pastors and bishops, and they have to earn it. We don't just hand out these study Bibles. They've really got to earn it. And I praise God for a new generation who've taken up the challenge of ministering to the Nuba Mountains. And we used to hold our Reformation Society meetings in the boardroom, and it did get quite cluttered. You might recall it. I remember Lenora seeing these curtains saying, "Those curtains have to go." And they're gone. So all of this is why we are now in the upper room. And this is what it looked like. You would not believe how many months they were busy up here without a floor. And sort of dancing around, and no, not just dancing around, people falling through the roof. We had beams coming through the roof. We had boots coming through the roof. We had their workmen, their foremen come, fell 3 meters straight through into the hallway. Lucky he was not injured, but we were very happy when the beams arrived. There was a supply chain complication during lockdown for some strange reason, and it seriously hampered our 5-month building project, dragged out into an 18-month building project. But we could already see there's some great views coming, and this is how it took shape. All of the wood in the attic here that's used in the bookshelves comes from the attic. I mean, the beams that were here, over 130 years old, some of them maybe 140 years old, imported from Oregon, for goodness sakes. Can you imagine it? Why would they import wood here? But anyway, it was imported wood, and that's in the bookshelves in the center, the Neil Huerth Memorial Library, Rhodesia Heritage Library. So it's using the original wood that was here. And they asked, is it all right to leave these cross beams for extra support? They said they could get around it, but to be more complicated. No, leave them. We leave the original wooden beams. That's fine if that helps with stability, and we'll turn it into a bookshelf, which we did. And so you can imagine the stairwell. Everything here is done within the existing attic, except for the stairwell. The stairwell had to be added on, but it was over what was the entranceway, the veranda. And step by step, things started to take shape. And I always knew that the last parts of the roof we couldn't use normally, so I said that must be for museum display cabinets behind glass that we could be able to give another view of the history of the mission. We are in Cape Town, and we are port city. But also, Bill Baffin was a member of the U.S. Navy. And so, when we saw a ship's wheel and a ship's bell in Mossel Bay, we acquired that for the upper room. And it's so much easier to call people to order with a bell anyway. It's far more ship-shape. Now, that was phase one. That's using our existing attic space. Phase two was going beyond the double doors at the back there onto what was our flat roof and now expanding it out. And that required raising the roof, literally, roof raising. And so these are some of the structures that were put in place, and some of these were very long beams. And it was a serious struggle getting them up and watching some of the construction efforts. You can just imagine, as they were building, raising, lifting, this is the recording studio in preparation, the guest room in preparation, the hallway in preparation, and this is what today is the kitchenette at the back and the stairs going down to the side. You've got the recording studio still in more preparation, the other wing of the recording studio. At one stage, I had wanted to have a bookshop up here, where we'd enter from this side, and then it was decided that was going to be too awkward. Let's keep the natural incline of the roof and make the entrance this side. And at that point, Christopher and Angelo talked me into making it a recording studio, which was an inspired idea. Great improvement on the original. So everything evolved. People don't evolve, but buildings do. Lenora said we have to have linen cupboards, and sure enough, we've now got linen cupboards. And storage space, and extra linen cupboards in the hallway as well, which Lich of Africa has acquired so far. But bunk rooms upstairs, so we've got four extra bedrooms. One's a what we call a formal guest room, and then we've got three bunk rooms, which are now a girls' dorm. So the outside girls' dorm's now been turned to another men's dorm. The kitchenette transformed over the time. Our going down, we used to come up by a stepladder to get up here. But and at the bottom of the stairs is a part of what used to be our veranda, which is now turned into a comms workshop. Because anywhere we're dealing with computers, there's lots of material that needs to be sorted out. And so you can see how things have developed. And now we have a whole new view. We've got three different verandas looking out onto not just the common and some palm trees, but even Table Mountain, Devil's Peak. And by the way, to see that view, Toolby had to do some balancing in order to do chopping of those trees that we got that view. We built out a totally new deck at the bottom, which is, I think comms might in the summer want to do some of the work out there, get some sun while about it. A hard-working cabinet maker, this carpenter got a lot of work with us. And I don't know if this would be acceptable in America as far as safety practices. What do they call it? So these are the sort of things you could use as an example of why men die early. Here's Toby up in a tree doing his tree trimming. It took a bit of persuading me that we needed to have some trees trimmed. Remember when Toby said he's got a chainsaw? If we ever need it, and I told him, keep your chainsaw far away and keep it hidden and never bring it out and don't use it here. But on this occasion, we let him under very careful supervision. One of the most ridiculous questions I've ever been asked in the field is people in Sudan, for example, saying, could you bring us a chainsaw? My answer was, no, never. Onder geen omstandighede. Is he a mole? No. Don't want you deforesting the place. I mean, hate the idea of chainsaws deforesting places, but on this occasion, it was overdue, I believe, and we were even growing into where the present verandas are, so we had to actually make space. So, this, aside from which, trucks coming down the driveway were starting to collide with it. So, this is long overdue, and my wife complains that I am continually harassing the gardeners not to cut more than they do. So, at any rate, that was phase two. Here's phase three, the kitchen, which I didn't think needed to be done. You can see what an absolute chaotic shambles of a mess they made. Chopping down walls, bringing in new support girders and the jackhammer. You could not believe the noise, and unless you were here at the time. But the rubble. And to do radio recordings, we had to pre-organize that they would stop causing havoc and noise so that we could actually be recorded and hear ourselves think. But the kitchen took shape, and we gained a lot of extra space, and I even had to grudgingly admit it was a great idea after the fact, but I wasn't convinced until it was finished. And Colin and Alishka and all the aides around have definitely benefited from the improved workspace. But can you believe it? We no sooner get a brand new kitchen than they've got to bring in a gas cooker from the field store and do some cooking there. So, aye. And our courtyard has diminished in size dramatically, but all the plants that used to be in the courtyard have been relocated and have survived the transplant. Then came... Whose office is this? That's Colin's office. That was one of the spillovers, not part of Plan 3, but sort of Phase 4 or something. And then there was the men's dorm. Another inspired idea to give them more space, knock down the wall, extend the window. We lost one of our lower verandas, but the men's dorm gained a whole lot more space. There was our guest room, which was transformed under the watchful eyes of Nate and Elizabeth into a library and prayer room, and you'll see how even the hallway started to get repainted, reorganized, things rehung, and the Frontline Fellowship office moved and the African Action office moved. They swapped around because now Delinda, ACA, in what used to be the Frontline office under Jill, and the field office has now become the Frontline office. So we had a switch around, and I was away on a mission and came back and I found the boardroom had been turned upside down and the carpet had been removed. So you see, this is the thing about renovations. Once you get started, there's a ripple effect. And next thing, the front wall got it heightened, which was another good move. And then there was all kinds of things being moved upstairs. And I remember Jeremy coming up and saying, "That's my bed." It was, but not anymore. And here's Edith checking out the new upper room and evidently met with her approval. We had the bookcase, Mary. And so at night, if you have a good look, you'll see our Livingston window atop Victoria Falls with both Zimbabwe and Zambia, two important fields for us, depicted on the other side, the Sola Scriptura with the Luther Rose. The upper room, I wanted it etched into the beam over the veranda. Lenora wanted it to the side because she said that's obscured by the screen, and you can guess whose idea won. And then there was, of course, more work on it. So Daniela and her team worked on making sure that the etching was done well. So, why have we named the upper room and the whole extended building project here the Bathman Memorial Hall? Well, Bill Bathman was an extraordinary person, one of the truly great missionaries of the 20th century. Bill Bathman, very well known in Zululand, in Eastern Europe, and in many other parts of the world. He ended his earthly ministry on 11th of December 2016 and entered eternity. Having fought both heart failure and cancer, in fact, he definitely had an extended life expectancy because he had a dedicated wife who was a registered nurse who definitely, she recognized symptoms of heart attack and stroke early on and when he is many years earlier. And Bill Bathman in many ways had more lives than a cat. In 1970, he had a head-on collision with a Porsche on Alpine Road in Austria, thrown through the windscreen of the car, suffered broken bones. He survived. He survived heart attacks and strokes in the 1980s. He distributed New Testaments to Soviet soldiers as they invaded Czechoslovakia in August 1968. In fact, you might have read in Brother Andrew's God Smuggler a phone call with another brother, not identified, but that was Bill Bethan, saying, I'll race you to Prague, capital of Czechoslovakia. The Russians were invading, so Bill Bethan was closer, he got there first, and Brother Andrew got there next, and they were standing shoulder to shoulder, handing out Russian New Testaments to the Russians on their tanks, and as they were invading and coming in, shearing off the sides of people's cars parked in the road. And in Vinslav Square, there, Bill Bethan and Brother Andrew were evangelizing Russia and said, well, if they're coming to us, let's take them Bibles. And when the communists were taking over Nicaragua in 1979, Bill Bethan was ministering there too. He was preaching in Romania at the time of the revolution, 1989. I took this picture in the square where you can see all the shops on the lower level are all shot out, burned out in the rioting, and the communists killed thousands of people in this square during the attacks. And in fact, that church, people were killed on the steps of that cathedral trying to escape in there. Bill Bethan turned 89 the 1st of December 2016. When I last saw him in October 2016, he was reading Randy Alcorn's book on heaven. I'm reading up on my next move. This is the best book on heaven I've ever read. There's far more about heaven in the Bible than I was ever aware of, he said. And he joked about how he's got two life-threatening diseases competing with each other as to which would get him first. When he had Hoffa's colon removed, he said, now I'm an author with a semicolon. And retirement is not in my vocabulary, said Bill Bethan. Whether the Lord comes or calls, I want to be ready. I want to die with my boots on. And he mentioned that he's worked on a new devotional book, Overflow. Giving does not empty your purse, nor does loving empty your heart. The thing that blesses people is not overwork, but overflow. Bill Bethan was chairman of the board of Frontline Fellowship for 14 years. Despite having lost a lot of weight and needing an oxygen concentrator to assist in his breathing, even in his last months, Bill Bethan was still an active chairman of the board of Frontline Fellowship, guiding, advising, instructing us out of his wealth of over six decades of Christian service. One of the best introductions to Bill Bethan that I heard was, two-thirds of the world are covered by water and the other third by Bill Bethan. Which is not much of an exaggeration, because my father-in-law was an extraordinary evangelist who ministered in 114 countries throughout his long and productive life. And yet I could still take him to one he hadn't gone to. When I took him up to Sudan, he said, well, that's a new one to add to the list. I hadn't been to Sudan before. Born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, 1st of December, 1927, Bill was driving delivery trucks already from age 14. And I said, how did you get a driver's license at age 14? He said, we didn't used to get driver's licenses. You got into trouble if you drove badly. It was irrelevant how old you were. There wasn't a singer's licenses back then. So during the Second World War, they were short of men. So as a 14-year-old, he's driving delivery trucks. Sounds like a good idea. And here you can see in the troop camp of the scouts. And Bill Bethan loved fast cars. He obtained his pilot's license to engage in extraordinarily dangerous aerial feats. We won't speak about some of the street racing he did, including having a gunner's seat mounted in the spare seat of a swivel gunner's seat in his car, so fixed with a fire extinguisher, they could pull up next to convertibles, traffic light, hose them down, and then race off down the road and able to swivel around and still shoot them with the hose pipes and fire extinguishers. Quite a person. Including landing on a football field at the university where he's studying, at Bob Jones University. He'd pick up his date, Harriet Bethan, using the plane. And he served in the Navy, U.S. Navy, on a destroyer. He was converted to Christ after entering theological training for the ministry. Now, as Bill Bethan said, he is a Methodist, and he is a theological student before he became a Christian and a Baptist. And his spiritual birthday was 8th of September, 1948, converted in Bob Jones University at their devotions, at the assembly. And he realized, I might be a theological candidate to study in for the ministry, but I don't know the Lord, I'm not saved. And I'm afraid there's a lot of people into the ministry or into training who aren't saved yet. So we mustn't take that for granted. You can kind of see where his mind was going. In fact, you can actually see in handwriting there, my darling. You can guess who he's writing it to as well. You can see the picture that he had on his notice board right in the cabinet over there to your left. In the summer of 1951, Bill Bethan led a five-man mission team to Europe. Now, can I just draw people's attention to the fact that mission teams used to wear the same suits and ties and have similar kind of haircuts, and isn't it extraordinary how that was normal that you'd have almost a uniform? I remember when the AB teams did that too. They'd be going out in outreaches and everyone would have a uniform kind of outfit and a very high standard dress, which we've lost something, haven't we? Within a month of graduating from BJU, Bill and his bride, Harriet Bethan, set off as missionaries to Europe. And that's quite a story in and of itself. But you can see Harriet Bethan is a Southern Belle from Atlanta, Georgia. If you've seen Gone with the Wind, you've got a bit of an idea of what Atlanta, Georgia was like. Notice how the groom also wear white. Interesting. One of his beloved cars. And I think you can detect some Brill cream. I think that was very popular back then. For the next 2 decades, they were based in England and then Austria and ministered throughout Western Europe, across the Iron Curtain, served persecuted churches in communist-controlled Eastern Europe. The Iron Curtain was the reality of the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And it was an Iron Curtain separating free Europe from slaved communist Europe, splitting right down from Trieste in the south to Stettin in the north. The biggest obstacle course ever constructed on earth to keep people under the yoke of communism. As Margaret Thatcher said, freedom has its problems, but we've never needed to build walls to keep our people in. The Berlin Wall stands as concrete proof that when people have a choice, they choose to be free. Checkpoint Charlie, one of the famous escapes. You'll notice this picture as you come up the stairs. This is a picture that was behind Bill Bethan's desk in his office for many years. One of the more famous, interesting escapes of a VOPO, Volkspolizei from East Germany, escaping right over the barbed wire at Checkpoint Charlie while it was still constructing the wall. And a city divided, people shot in the back for attempting to go from East Berlin to West Berlin. Such as Peter Fetcher, just one of many, killed on his birthday, age 18, trying to escape to freedom in the West. Many people killed for no other reason than wanting to escape from communism. And yet, even today, there are people enthusiastic for communism. And you can see the Soviet Union's flag, the red Chinese flag, and the Vietnamese flag all together, and the blue flags of the United Nations following dutifully behind. This is May Day. And you can see the communist religion and the idolatry, the red star, the idol of Lenin, and all the flags, not just flags of communist countries. I mean, there's India's flag. They're not communist. There's the flags of other countries that you can see here, so that, like, Spain's not communist. Why is Spain's flag there? What's the Texas flag doing there? The Norwegian flag, and so on. The Danish flag. So you could just see communism was a missionary religion. You have a will to win, they said. The goal to win the whole world for communism. And many times the communists showed greater zeal and enthusiasm for their false gospel than true Christians feel for the real gospel. And here again, Bill Bethan would point out that on May Day, you could see the fraud of the so-called Sino-Soviet split and of the non-aligned status of Yugoslavia. Because here you've got the flag of Yugoslavia with the red star, right next to Red China's, next to North Korea's, next to Hungary's. Over there, you've got Bulgaria. There, you've got Czechoslovakia. Where's this supposed split between China and the Warsaw Pact? And fraud. They're all together. The people suffered. Sometimes Bill Bethan would be preaching through two interpreters to be able to reach the people. And we've experienced that. We've had experienced three. What's the most you've had in the field? Probably three interpreters? You've had two. Well, I've had up to three interpreters in the field, but this wasn't unusual in Eastern Europe. So maybe Bill Bethan could speak to this person in German, he could translate into Romanian, the other one could translate into, and so it was. Different ways of communication. And Bill Bethner's an inspiring, inspired, powerful preacher. He didn't just smuggle Bibles in Eastern Europe. He preached the gospel throughout. Czechoslovakia's invasion in 1968 was one of those pivotal moments when the communists invaded one of their own countries, which was just trying to, what did they call it, have communism with a human face. They were trying to just socialize, but a little bit of moderation, and in came the entire Warsaw Pact, invaded Czechoslovakia and crushed it. Hundreds of thousands of people killed. Soviet tanks pouring in and the people protesting in vain. But Czechoslovakia is one of the primary focuses of Bill Bethner during those times. And you could see these beautiful churches. This is Romania. You can see from the kind of cars, you can see from the language on the outside too. And Aeroflot. Bill Bethner said, yep, he flew in that biplane over there. And safety instructions on our planes, you know, it's quite detailed. He said safety instruction on Aeroflot plane was, this aircraft is equipped with air sickness bags. And that was it. And he said, and you needed them. They had, in Romania, they had Tarom Airlines, which was described as tired old Russian machines. Tarom. This is George Verver, back when he met Bill Bethman at the beginning of the 1960s. In fact, George Verver, when I first met him, George Verver was at a meeting in Stellenbosch at the Studentenkerk, and there was a massive crowd, and as he was trying to leave, and there was a massive crush of people around, I just said to George Verver as he passed by, I said, I'm Bill Bethman's son-in-law. And he turned around and said, Bill Bethman's the reason there is an Operation Mobilization. He's the one who invited me to England, got me into network. We moved our headquarters to England. He said, that's where we got the whole idea of Operation Mobilization and mobilizing throughout Europe. And so George Verver is an enthusiastic friend of Bill Bethman's throughout his life. And through him, we've been having a great relationship. And he's one of our primary enthusiastic supporters for our Indigenous Language Bibles special project through Literature for Africa. Small world, interesting connections. For 10 years, Bill Bethman hosted a daily radio program. Daily radio program, that's quite demanding. It was called In Touch. For over 20 years, he is the editor of a monthly geostrategic newsletter called Global Glance, or G2. He moved and lived in Cape Town for 8 years, and lived in Penny Reef in Pinelands. In this superficial age of short-term ministry, Bill and Harriet Bethman have clearly demonstrated what real mission is all about. Wholehearted, lifelong commitment. By the way, this is an interesting picture. We have Lenora's elder sister, Deborah Peltzman, here, and this is her wedding day. And I think Debbie was only 18 on that day, but married. Almost 19, there we go. And you might notice Lenora's the one in yellow on the far right. Yep. So that was married in the Sound of Music city, Salzburg itself. For over 67 years, the Bethans invested everything they had into the cause of evangelism and serving the persecuted church. They immersed themselves in the lives of the people amongst whom they were called to serve. They were 22 years into ministry in Europe before they took the first furlough. Now, you may know that most missionaries take furloughs every 4 years. Some leave the field long before that. But Bill and Harriet Bethman show us what it means to endure hardship, to persevere under trial, to stand firm to the end. In October 2016, I asked Bill, when he first met Brother Andrew, and all the years I've traveled with Bill Bethman, I've never discussed that, but I was intrigued. And, you know, it just shows how sharp his mind is. He says, it was 1957, I was conducting services across Europe. That night, I was in Bensheim, Germany, when I saw two cars with Netherlands license plates. One was a VW Beetle, the other a 1957 Chevy. Now, that just tells you Bill Bethman right there. You know, he remembers the car, he remembers the license plate. They were en route to Hungary and Poland. Then Bill remarked that sometime later, when they met to coordinate training programs and missions behind the Iron Curtain, Brother Andrew had commented on his text and sermon that night in Bensheim, which was from 2 Peter 2:22. But it has happened to them, according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his vomit and a sow being washed to her wallowing in the mire. Brother Andrew said he could never forget such an unusual evangelistic sermon and text. And that's the thing. If you've heard Bill Bethman preach, you remember. because it's always unusual and it's gripping. When I had the privilege of accompanying Reverend Bill Baffin on missions to Eastern Europe, both before and after the collapse of the Iron Curtain, I was struck by how much the people there loved him. In Poland, Czech, Slovakia, Yugoslavia, Croatia, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, it was inspiring to see with what overwhelming joy the pastor and local Christians met him, and to see the rapt attention, the shining faces as these devoted members of each congregation just hung on every word of his. They stood, they sat riveted, hanging on every word of their beloved Fratelli Bill, or Brother Bill. Time and again, the precious believers in Eastern Europe eagerly relate to me how Bill Baffin had been the first Christian to visit him, how he had visited him the most, how he had stayed the longest, how he had given the most, how he had come back again and again. By the way, this is a classic picture of a Bill Baffin vehicle crossing the border. It must be another team behind that took the picture. That's the A for Austria on the back of the car, because, of course, they were based in Salzburg, Austria. And he came through the Iron Curtain when the need was the greatest, during the darkest years, when it was the most dangerous. When few others seemed to care or to dare, Bill Baffin was there for them. Reverend Bill Baffin is a world-class preacher, an extraordinary evangelist. However, you could never compare his preaching in the West with the incredibly anointed ministry God poured through in Eastern Europe. Leaders in Romania like Reverend Joseph Tsarn and Dr. Nicolae Gorghita on the left and Dr. Paul Negrut on the right in Oradea, they told me the outbreak of the revival in Romania began with Bill Baffin. He is delivering a particularly powerful series of sermons in January 1983 at Second Baptist Church, now Emmanuel Baptist Church. It was an extraordinary evangelistic crusade which resulted in revival blessings flowing throughout Western Romania. Now, it often seems that modern missionary volunteers just want to dabble in missions for the experience, get the T-shirt. However, Bill Baffin's book, Going Through, Even If the Door's Closed, and Going On with a Nod from God, present inspiring examples of dedication, discipleship, serious service. Not just splashing in the shallows, but delving into the deep. Spiritually speaking, missions need more than short-distance sprinters. It needs long-distance marathon runners. Reverend Bill Baffin can now declare, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, I've kept the faith. In missions, obstacles abound. Disappointments, dangers, difficulties, discouragement, these are occupational hazards of cross-cultural missions. But Bill Baffin persevered for 67 years, demonstrating that sacrificial service is more eloquent. It's the most eloquent sermon of all. There's nothing better you can say than what you do. I also had the privilege of ministering with Bill Baffin in Mexico, Southwest Africa, Namibia, Angola, Congo, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Kenya, and Sudan. In fact, I can say I've traveled with Bill Baffin more than any other co-worker. And he said he's never traveled with anyone else as much as he did with me. He took lots of people in the field, but we did the most countries, the most miles, the most months in the field together. In fact, Bill Baffin was 74 years old when I flew with him into Western Equatoria, South Sudan, 2001. Now, we planned this quite stealthily because I was pretty convinced that my wife and mother-in-law would be horrified at the thought. Bill Baffin started doing more long-distance walking and I think more comfortable shoes and boots and all sorts of things. And I think suspicions were being raised. But meanwhile, what we were doing was organizing that when he came down here for the 50th anniversary of their wedding, their marriage, and of his ministry, and I'd organized ministry around the country, and then at a certain point we were going to break away and take him to Sudan. And I thought that there would be quite a bit of hostility about the idea, the irresponsibility of taking a 74-year-old great-grandfather into the field. But anyway, we did it. And he actually flew the plane in too, because he's a competent pilot. And the pilot was happy to say, no, take the controls. And here we are. In fact, this isn't Bill Baffin landing. This is the plane taking off because we were on the ground to get the picture, obviously. But still, it's symbolic of the landing. Bill Baffin went right up to the front line of the battlefronts, preaching in areas where he had come under, where we had come under aerial bombardment and artillery barrages. And on these occasions, these are just some of the people we met, churches that have been bombed, delivering Bibles, preaching. And everywhere we went, people would fall on their knees to greet them. Why? Do you see any other grey-haired men there? There's no grey-haired people there. The life expectancy there is way, way, way lower than what we would take for granted. And so to see a person who's grey-haired, the Bible says to rise in the presence of the grey-haired and show respect to the grey-haired and so on. And so these people who take respect for elders so much more seriously than the West, where youth is exalted and age is looked down on. But in Sudan, nope. Like most of Africa, age is respected. And so Bill Betham was received with great honor everywhere, you know, to see a grey-haired person. None of their people tend to live that old. And training teachers, ministering at the battlefront, even right up in the very front. This is the picture he put on the cover of his book, Going On. And of course, you can't do a mission without AK-47s. And Bill Betham chose the one with the pistol grip, the wooden pistol grip up front, because that is the Romanian one. There are AK-47s designed all around the world. There are about 60 different versions. And one of my friends, Colonel Desrad Moore, got one of each, at least one of each. But this is the Romanian one. So I'm holding the Chinese one. But anyway, there's just such a range of AK-47s, where they were made and so on. But Bill Betham immediately chose the Romanian version because that's where he's done so much ministry. He so enjoyed his ministry to the persecuted church in South Sudan that upon returning to Cape Town, he purchased a Land Cruiser, loaded up with Bibles and essential supplies for the Sudanese, drove it overland to Sudan to deliver it. So much for my irresponsibility of taking a man in his 70s by plane into the war zone. He drove overland. Do you know how far that is? You can ask Daniel. He's driven overland to Sudan. It's a long way. And if you want to look on the map and try and work it out, then don't think the roads are the same, because the moment you get north of the border, the roads deteriorate. And the further north you go, the worse the roads can get. So, but he did it in pretty record time too. And you can read all about that in Going On as well. His example reminds us of Caleb, who could say at the end of his life, "Give me that mountain." Now, mountains are much harder than the plains, as those who've done a Great Commission course, Table Mountain Hike, can tell you. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Bill Betham founded three missions: Network, based in Britain; Pioneers, based in Austria; and ITMI, based in America. He also poured his life into the mission of Frontline Fellowship, especially during the 7 years they were based in Cape Town from 2001 to 2008. By the way, this is Deborah's daughter getting married in the Sound of Music Chapel in Austria. Cathedral, excuse me. Our eldest daughter, Andrea, had the joy of being trained by her granddad in how to play chess and win. And he also taught her how to swim and to ride a bike and to drive long before she was old enough to have a driver's license. She could drive. In fact, Andrea's the only one in our family who got a driver's license on her 18th birthday. First time. So that's quite extraordinary. But then she did have a very good teacher. All of his grandchildren in Cape Town thoroughly enjoyed having their grandparents close at hand, involved in their daily lives and their schooling. So Cape Town was Phil Bathton's base for what he said are some of the happiest years of his life, being based here. Life change. Livingston Fellowship. Bill and Harriet Bethlen have three daughters, Deborah, Linda, and Lenora. You can see Lenora's the shortest one there in this particular picture. But that was taken some time ago. You can tell by the glasses they're wearing. Okay, that's more recent. And Lenora was baptized in Romania. You can see Lenora's second row, second from the left. Bill Bethan's third from the left in the front row. And there's Dr. Nick Gurghita right next to him, and Dr. Paul Negrete. These are legends in Romania in the persecuted church. Lenora said she wanted to be baptized in Romania, where her friends were baptized, because it means something in Romania. And that baptism is not taken too seriously in the West. Well, we don't have a picture of the person who who was baptized before. There were 60, 70 odd who were baptized that day, but there was somebody baptized that day whose testimony made everyone weep in the church. And when it was translated, it turned out that she said five family members of hers are Communist Party members, including her husband, her father, her brother, two uncles, Communist Party members, and her father, her husband, had come to her that morning, put a knife to her throat, said, "You get baptized today, I will kill you." And she made that testimony and she went ahead and she was baptized. Now, that's not the picture of her, there's Lenora being baptized, but Paul Negroot, pictured here, went with this woman back to her home, and her husband was so shattered because he knew that she knew that he meant it. And he's converted. He's kicked out of the party. He's kicked out of his home. He's kicked out of his job. Lost everything. Had to move in with another member of the family, of the church, because his wife had been baptized and he had been converted. And so he lost everything that comes with being a party member. Well, on the 25th of March, Easter Saturday, 1989, Bill Batten walked his youngest daughter down the aisle at B.I. Chapel. And shortly thereafter, we went on a Bible smuggling operation with parents-in-law into Eastern Europe. That's Bill Batten in the car in front of us. And this is in Romania. And these are some of the friends that we met in Eastern Europe. Dr. Nick Gorghita, another legend over there. This would be a picture of Laura and her sister Deborah in Austria at one of their family wedding events. This is Lenora's niece. Debbie's daughter is also Lenora, and her wedding event. And Bill Bethlen actually preached at this wedding, which, because the husband was Catholic, it wasn't a Catholic church, but because she said she wanted her grandfather to preach at the sermon, and when he said, "Is this going to be all right?" the Catholic priest said, "Oh, Rome's a long way away, don't worry about it, that's fine." So the things that we get away with these days. So that's the other Lenora. So Andrea, Daniela, Crystal and Calvin are other grandchildren of the Bethlehems, and on this occasion, was this Andrea's dedication? So when Andrea was dedicated, she is dedicated not just in her grandfather's, but I believe it was her great-grandfather's christening gown. So that's got a lot of history in it. Okay, it wasn't a christening, but it was a dedication, but still nice to have history in these things. And so here's the dedication service. So Andrea was only 5 weeks old when her mother whisked off to America, and I caught up about a month later, and we had a dedication service for Andrea over there, so that her parents could be the only one of our children to go to America so young. But anyway, after a month or two there, Bill Batten said, "Do you know that your daughter's been in America longer than she's been in South Africa?" And I was sort of thinking about that, and I said, "Not if you're pro-life." So Andrea was brought up to love kitties and reading early on. Well, when Christopher was born, my mother and my mother-in-law, who both registered nurses, they managed to get banned from the hospital ICU because there used to be a sign at the ICU saying only family members. And then after a while, they put up new signs saying no grandparents. Oh, no. Yes, you can imagine too. Because Christopher was in ICU for the first month of his life. A real touch and go. I mean, doctors didn't think he'd survive at all, being born with complete kidney failure. A real miracle child. But because of these two grandmother nurses who were, "Why are you doing this?" And you can imagine, they did not like that. So it was very hard for Lenora to come home without her baby and had to keep going back in regularly. But finally, when Christopher came home, adoring sisters, happy to have their first baby brother to play with. And the Bethlehems really took to the youngest grandson, and Christopher went through a lot. Now, see if you can see any family resemblances here. Bill Bethlehem really loved his cars. And we found Christopher's also really into his cars. Well, here we've got three generations that are life-changing. And Auntie Debbie early on took on seeking to help to homeschool her nephews and nieces down here, and of course the baking sprees with Daniela, and this is the kind of thing you could expect in the kitchen. We've been spoiled with Lenora's cooking, but I must say, Debbie takes it to a whole new level too. And I think Christopher and Calvin were really privileged to have their grandparents in their life, much more than the other grandchildren. There's 9 great-grandchildren of the Baffins: Johannes, Matthias, Madeline May, Emmeline Grace, Miriam, Sebastian, and now Jeremy, Josh, and Oliver, the last 3, Andrea's contribution. Bill Baffin lived an action-packed life, ministering throughout Europe in the aftermath of the Second World War and throughout the tumultuous events of the Cold War. When he went to England, they were still rationing. When he went to Berlin, the city was still mostly rubble. Ministering in Rhodesia during the Bush War in the 1970s, he first came to Rhodesia in 1977, the year I was converted, coming into land at a Bush airstrip in Rhodesia, and he was able to be part of the country that was so important in my upbringing. When Rhodesia was under attack from all sides, Bill Baffin was one of the friends who spoke up for Rhodesia, sought to mobilize prayer and practical action on behalf of our beleaguered nation. And I think that's meant a lot to know that we've got a family connection that was one of the few friends Rhodesia had at a time when we were under fire and under attack from all sides. Bill Baffin was in Rhodesia when these events happened, and he recorded, and you can listen to his recordings on understanding the threat and explaining about the attacks on the Viscounts and interviewing people who are survivors. And all of these are part of Bill Baffin's audio documentaries that he produced. And we met with Ian Smith regularly and were able to minister with him, meet with him. Here's the Baffins with Ian Smith in Cape Town. Southwest Africa, which is such an important part of our early years in our mission, also important mission field for Bill Baffin. And during the revolution in Central America, he is ministering also in Red China during the repressions there, ministering to one of the toughest, worst countries on earth in China, ministering in a revival in Zululand, KwaSabantu Mission with Erlo Stegen. We've got a message from him tonight too. And this is where the auditorium used to be before they built the massive auditorium. And you can see Harriet Baffin sitting in the front row. The children always sat on the floor in the front. I was always amazed how well behaved they were. They didn't shuffle around, and they weren't disruptive. Extraordinary. Hadn't seen that anywhere else. Didn't know that was possible. And seeing the auditorium before it was built, and in the early stages with Philip Stott explaining his vision, and just all the growth at KwaSabantu Mission, this just reminds one of when those trees were being planted. I remember right at the beginning of 1991, seeing a person planting it, and the pastor with me said, "What are you doing? You're wasting your time. Jesus is coming soon. He'll come before any of these trees could have grown." And, well, today it's much more. And Bill Baffin said, Erlo Stegen said, "Somebody said that to my father 50 years before. Why is he planting this grove of trees? Jesus is coming soon." And he said, "It's those trees 50 years later that we harvested to build the 5 kilometers of pews in the auditorium." So there's always people telling you why not to do things. But what did Martin Luther say? "If I thought Jesus was coming tomorrow, I'd plant an apple tree today." And so through the years, the old auditorium, the choirs, the old pulpits, the ministering in the tent, evangelism, Bill Baffin was a real favorite at KwaSabantu, as we'll read just now. During the revival amidst persecution in Sudan, in Albania, some of our most incredible missions after the Iron Curtain came down, getting into Bulgaria, getting into all these places from East Germany, all the way through, seeing the Berlin Wall come down. One of the most extraordinary experiences. I think 1989 was, in many ways, one of the greatest years of my life. We had beaten the communists in Angola. I got married in 89. We destroyed the communists in Angola, we saw the Berlin Wall come down, the Iron Curtain collapse. Every one of the communist countries in Eastern Europe toppled before the end of the year. 1989 was incredible. South Africa had won. The Cubans were defeated and fleeing Angola. The Russians were leaving East Germany. The Berlin Wall was down. Germany was being reunited. It's just incredible. Czechoslovakia, Romania, the last of the communist countries to fall. Christmas Revolution, 1989. Lenore and I had been there just early in the year, back in April. And now the people were taking up arms. The army itself were joining the population and fighting against the government and cutting out the Soviet symbols, the hated red star at the center of the flag. And this is the new Romanian flag. We actually got this here too. We should bring that out, find a place for that also. The Romanian flag exercised of its communist elements. And so to go to Romania with Bill Bethlen immediately before and immediately after this revolution, absolutely extraordinary. And here's Bill Bethlen standing on the street corners. You can see under the new flag, but notice you don't have to worry about traffic problems. There weren't any cars really around at that time. And Timișoara, free Romania. And we were able to dedicate a church that had been under the communist control for over 40 years as a bottling factory, retake the church and consecrate again for the worship of the Lord. That's Calvary Baptist Church in Arad. And the idols came down. And tens of thousands of statues of Lenin and of Dzerzhinsky and Karl Marx and all the rest shipped off to the rubbish dumps. Here we were driving Bill Beth and I through to Albania, through Yugoslavia, through the civil war in Yugoslavia, to Albania. Once the most closed country in the communist world, the hardest country to reach, the most atheistic country in the world, place where Titus was fed to the lions in the Colosseum. But Romania, here we are in Romania, where absolute revival took place. This church under Paul Negrut was rebuilt into this new, amazing church. Paul Negrut, who was many times threatened with death, threatened with everything else by the Marxists, became leader of one of the most successful churches, Bible colleges, seminaries, universities in Eastern Europe. There's more Baptist theological students in his university in Arad than there are in all the other Baptist colleges in all of Western Europe combined, in all the other countries. That's how strong the church is in Romania. Excellence Christian Academy in Zambia, Zambian National Radio. Bill Bethlen's fervent faith under fire in the war zones of Africa, documenting many of the triumphs of the gospel amidst tragedies. The tremendous testimonies of God's grace, his provision, his protection, his guidance during tumultuous times of terrorism, threatening faith and freedom today, are documented in his book, for example, Angola by the Back Door, where he documents one frontline mission where we were smuggling behind enemy lines. This is 1994, December 94. Four teams went into the field. And Bill Bethlen was part of one of the teams in Zambia, where I was, and only one of our vehicles came back. The year that we lost Anthony Duncan in the field, after their team was ambushed, arrested, they'd succeeded in delivering a ton of Bibles and medicines into Angola, but on the way back, ambushed, arrested, imprisoned, vehicle wiped out, and later, I mentioned, mobilized the Zambian government to get them released by putting pressure on the Angolans, to put pressure on Namibians to get them out. But later on his way back to Cape Town, he died in a head-on collision. And that story, that whole incredible story, is in Angola by the Back Door. So Bill Bethlen's writings and going on and going through take you behind the lines and beyond the news headlines, to what really happened in these conflicts, in these restricted access areas during these dramatic years from the 1950s through to just a few years ago. If you haven't read these books, you are missing out. And Collins also works at making available as e-books. Even at 88 years old, Bill Bethlen was still able to get banned from a pulpit for giving an altar call. He preached like the people were sinners, like they need to repent in audacity. So he was not one to miss evangelistic opportunities. He called people to repentance and faith in Christ at every opportunity. I met people who recalled how they had seen Bill Bethlen go into pubs in England, stand on a bar counter, proclaim the gospel to the customers, invite them to come outside, they wanted to hear more. And people would always come outside and he'd share the gospel with them. He recruited people to churches from pubs. With physicians and pharmacists and nurses, he'd often be heard saying, "I've learned one thing in life." That caught their attention and aroused their curiosity. What had this old man learned about life? There'd be a brief pause while they waited for the answer. "We'll never get out of it alive." There's usually a laugh, an agreement with this obvious truth. So the only way to live is to be ready to die. That's what he'd say. That's logical. And then he'd add, "It's appointed unto man once to die and after to face judgment." The only way to be ready to die is to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name." Bill Bethan sometimes said to us, Jesus Christ once said to professional fishermen, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." He would then challenge us to win souls. "Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." We're all the better and the stronger for having known Bill Bethan. And we're calling this upper room the Bethan Memorial Hall because of his extraordinary life, and also in a very practical way, he's paid for this. Lenora took the entire inheritance she received from her parents and put it into this upper room building project. That's 3.5 million rands worth of work, which is around us. And that extends all the way down to the kitchen, into men's dorm and everything else that's been done. And that's all been funded by Lenora with investment she received from her parents that she could have easily used for anything else. And so who better to honor as one of the cloud of witnesses that's around us than Bill Bethan? "But we rejoice in the blessed hope of the resurrection of the body at the day when our Lord Jesus Christ returns to judge the world. Death to the Christian is not fatal, it's not final. Jesus Christ is the resurrection and the life." And so, when you come up in here, you see, I always had intended us to have a Rhodesia Heritage Library, and we have got the beginnings of the Rhodesia Association's books, and now others are donating it too. We have got memorials around the sides, including Bill Bethan's Navy hat and his cameras and his big, massive recording kit that he used to use for recording the In Touch programs and for Transworld Radio, and the 16mm projectors he used, some of his passports that he used. We've got his goggles that he used for the plane, the goggles he used for his scooter, some of the editing equipment, and a whole lot of things, from Peace of the Berlin Wall, you name it. A lot of these are actual resources used by them, including Herod Bethan's cape and nursing cape. A lot of the old technology we used, including the satellite phone we used in Sudan, the first audio Bibles we used, the Man the Boxer Speaks My Language, that's the old gospel recordings, hand-cranked or solar panel-powered tape recorders, the DVD players, the VCD players, these are the little PA systems that we'd use, 16mm films of the Jesus film, all the way through to some of our old answering machines, fax machines, tape duplicating equipment, and equipment that most people would not really be used to today. Some of our audiovisual projects, writing projects. We've actually published over 110 titles published in-house from here. And so all these are just part of what we have around us as a great cloud of witnesses to remind us. The first time we used the upper room for any meal was the Thanksgiving service last year, in November. It's used for devotions. It's used for special seminars, live streaming, like with creation scientist Philip Stott earlier this year, and with seminars that we've held, conferences, and it's been a wonderful opportunity to have good facilities for events, whether it's the Reformation 500 event, to have our own in-house musicians able to give us excellent musical accompaniment. And we praise God for even having special events like this musical concert, which I said everyone who wasn't here missed out, And we've been told on Heritage Day, they'll gladly give us another concert. So, on Heritage Day, that is Friday, the 25th of August, no, 25th of September, we're going to be having another opportunity to have a concert up here, and we look forward to that very much. These are some of our musicians that we had in the last concert. I must say, I was seriously concerned about some of the high heels some of these people came in. I wondered if our floors would survive the stilettos. But at any Reformation Society events or church services that we've had up here, when they had lockdowns and no service allowed, we were keen to bypass that. And Great Commission course, Bible drill, essential part of any kind of course and camp. Now we can do it here, and we didn't have to get locked down outside. Other venues might have been, but when we had level 4 lockdown, we could still continue because we had our own venue. Just a minute. And when it was raining outside, we had to do some sword fighting inside here, and Judah actually thought that he could take me on, but then they thought they'd gang up with two of them. Didn't work. Our kitties know how things work. They know the most comfortable place, the best chairs, all that sort of thing. So, that's why this is called the Bathlon Memorial Hall. Any questions, any comments? We're going to have an opportunity for tributes and testimonies after next hymn, but any comments or questions on what I've given so far?
How many languages did he preach in?
I think Bill Bathlon would preach in English, and sometimes he'd communicate in German for the benefit of a translator. Sorry?
He could say a lot of Bible verses in German. But
yes. Right. He knew Bible verses in German. And in fact, I've heard him giving in Romanian some Bible verses, and so he would have some verses, but normally he'd be using translators, yes. Yes. Unfortunately, it was basically hijacked from him. While he was here in South Africa, a person he had left to caretake it as the office manager decided to oust him as the lead of the mission. So when he went back to America, he came back to a coup d'etat. In his words, they did an Absalom on him. You know what Absalom did to King David, his father. So Bill Bathlon found himself not wanted at his own mission that he had founded before. I'm afraid that's not unusual. I've found a lot of that sort of thing happening. It's extraordinary. You know, World Vision, one of the biggest NGOs in the world today, it used to be a mission, was founded by Bob Pierce. And Bob Pierce was kicked out by his own committee. Kicked out, and they turned World Vision from an evangelical soul-winning ministry into almost secular group. They might raise money from Christians, but the people on the ground in the field are not Christian. So Bob Pierce went down the road and he started a new mission called Samaritan's Purse. He recruited Franklin Graham to be his understudy. That happened when I was entering missions. I remember Francis Grimm telling me about Bob Pierce, a friend of his, who'd just been ousted out of his own ministry by, you know, dissidents, whatever you want to call them. And they really changed the whole position of it. So Bill Bathlon gladly handed over a network when he left England to relocate to Austria to other people around with him. When he left Austria to relocate to America, he handed over pioneers. But ITMR was, in my word, I'd say more like stolen. Yes.
Is that the pioneers that's the major missions organization today? Or is that a different pioneers?
It could be a different pioneers because the pioneers he started was primarily focused on ministering to Eastern Europe. Deborah, do you know, is Pioneers still functioning the way your dad set it up, or did that close down at some point?
Most of the people that founded the Pioneers are deceased now.
Okay, so the group that's today called Pioneers is a different group. Right. Yes?
A lot of his ministry was into areas where there was a lot of disinformation campaigns raging. Can you maybe list a few examples where his testimony actually broke silence?
Yes, indeed. In fact, he and Lenora's work on this is one of the books of Bill Bathlon's manuscripts that have not yet come to print, and it's a Reformation revival in Romania. Bill Bathlon smuggled out Joseph Tarn's works, made him known in the West, helped Joseph Tarn to come out and be established in the West, where he was broadcasting. He started the Romanian Missionary Society. Vast amounts of great classic Christian books translated in Romanian. And Joseph Chan was able to be broadcasting the gospel week by week into Romania by Radio Free Europe and so on. And later on, when Romania was free, get in and start to build up Christian schools, universities, mission societies, publishing houses. He came back with vast amounts of books already in Romanian to disciple the country. Now, Bill Baffin made those things possible. He was speaking up for and being a voice for the folks in the field. And I've met many who said that. In Bulgaria, in Czechoslovakia, in Poland, a lot in Poland. We could say a lot about what the people in Poland said about his work. But I think Romania, he probably had one of the biggest impacts. And Romania, by the way, has got the third largest group of Baptists in the world. The largest group of Baptists in the world is America. Second largest group of Baptists in the world is America. Third largest is Romania. And by the way, Romania's got the third largest number of evangelical born-again Christians in Europe, percentage-wise. Largest is Russia, second largest Ukraine, third largest is Romania. So Romania is also one of the biggest missionary-sending countries in all of Europe right now, which is, you know, just that's the fruit of some of the work.
Sorry, I was actually pointing out to political also events like the Gatlin Forest Massacre.
Oh, well, he was making known, for example, what was going on in Hungary and especially Czechoslovakia in 1968. He eyewitnessed what was going on. We've got his audio documentary, I think Angela's uploaded onto SoundCloud. We've got the one on the invasion of Czechoslovakia. It's one of Bill Baffin's audio cassettes that we've digitized and uploaded. So we've got several of his documents. So he used radio as his primary means for speaking up for the people in Eastern Europe. A lot of these are testimony. So on these audio documentaries, like Understand the Threat, Understanding Communism, Understanding Africa, all of these audio documentaries that he had broadcast, these were including interviews with people on the ground. Those tape recorders you see in there, he is always putting the tape recorder under people, asking questions while I was with him. I could just see he was an interviewer, and he would get the East Europeans to speak for themselves and then broadcast it to the West. And there's quite a bit of that in the Going Through book as well. So these books of Bill Baffin's, Going Through, we did help with some of it, but it was printed in America. You can see that because there's blank pages at the back. Whereas we printed the Going On, we did this totally in-house here in Cape Town, and this is, there's no blank pages at the back. This, you can see, was published in America. Lots of blank pages at the back, and a cover that Lenora cringes at. But still, this is an excellent devotional on 101 devotionals on Matthew. But the cover makes you think it's a children's book, but actually, it's a great devotional series on the Gospel of Matthew. We look forward to reprinting it with a new cover. Angola by the Back Door, of course, is the one that he was part of the four missions in December 1994, and so he knew all the people involved, and he documented the whole story of that, the worst month in Frontline's history. Any other questions? Well, yes?
Justin.
Mexico. Ah, that's another interesting story. So I've driven into Mexico with Bill Baffin, and he would take us to these churches and Bible colleges and so on. We'd minister, and the people there would give us horror stories about the American youth groups and others that would come over and do Mexican projects while the Mexicans sat under the tree watching the gringos build them a gringo church and so on. And you know, people would come on the whole, because Mexico is right next to America, a lot of well-meaning churches would come over and build them churches, do all sorts. It's not like Mexico is short of labor, you know, or time. And but then the church would hear nothing for 2 years, and they'd get a letter, the roof of your church is leaking, come fix it, you know, things like that, where the people obviously didn't benefit much by this, they just took it for granted. And so they would say they make a distinction between a gringo church and a real church, and which is owned by the local people, built up by the locals. So many of the people in Mexico warned us about these gringo churches, and also how much harm can be done by people who think they're coming to help. And it's one thing to work alongside people. It's another thing to go and do for others what they can do for themselves. And, you know, we should only do for others what they can't do for themselves. And we should help people to get on their own feet. We shouldn't enable people being lazy, for example, as is the case in Mexico. But I must say, Mexico was very intriguing, and a lot of crime, corruption, violence, and the people who minister there are very knowledgeable. So one stat I remember being told by Bill Batten's friend in Romania, in Mexico, is that there's more trained, ordained Mexican pastors in Phoenix, Arizona, than the whole northern province of Mexico. And the and you could say the same thing about Zambia or Mozambique. There's probably more trained, ordained Mozambican pastors in South Africa than Mozambique. Probably more trained Zambian pastors in South Africa than Zambia, and so on. You could say the same of medical doctors, because the people will come over, get their training, and not go back home. And so America is siphoning people out of Mexico who are leaders. They come there for training, and they don't go back. They get too comfortable. And that's true for Africa. It's true for South America. People moving in. And so you should take the training to people where they are. You shouldn't take people out of the area, so that the people who move from a rural area to an urban area for training don't tend to return to the rural. People who move from a third world country to a first world country for training don't tend to return. And that's true for Eastern Europe. Bill Batten said he'd never help an East European move to America or the West. He said he never knew any who benefited. They're all, you know, their marriage would break up, children would backslide, get into drugs, all these sort of things. He said they might know how to handle persecution. You take them into the West, they can't handle the temptations, stresses and pressures there. And so he was very against this business of just get everyone to move over to Canada and North America or something. He said, no. And the Mexican Christians were very hostile to Americans coming and doing for them what they can do for themselves, or drawing their people out for training, and then they were just lost to the country. They'd almost never come back. So those are some of the things you learn from Mexico.